Good evening. I'm Shinryu Sensei. I think I know everyone here. It's really good to be with you here tonight, practicing together. Nice also that the noise of the heavy equipment has stopped. It was a really nice day today. Felt balmy. And I think one of the reasons why the change in season is so special is because we can actually see the change happening. It's like, oh, the daffodils are up. When we're in the middle of the season, it feels like we're just in the middle of it. But here, you really see the change happening. It's a different perception. And I think that in our lives, we tend to get into a rut when we don't see the change. We think nothing's changing here, when actually everything is changing all the time. So it's helpful to be able to see from day to day, week to week, or moment to moment, things are changing. So I thought I would begin with a poem about beginnings, a poem about spring. And this is from W.S. Merwin. And the title is To This May. They know so much more now about the heart, we are told. But the world still seems to come one at a time. One day, one year, one season, and here, it is spring once more, with its birds resting in the holes in the walls, its morning finding the first time, its light pretending not to move, always beginning as it goes. I love that. The moment finding the first time, always beginning as it goes. I don't know if you've all been following the press reports, but there have been a number of stories recently in the paper and in the blogosphere about the new meditation boom. It's been a subject of some conversation here. It's going on in New York City. It's going on beyond New York City. Here in our own neighborhood, there are, I'm not sure what they're called, but like meditation salons that you can go to. You can drop in the middle of the day, busy day, and sit for half an hour. You can set up an appointment to have your cushion ready for you at 2:30. I think, what is it, like, $20 for a half an hour, something like that, that they charge. One of the ways that it's promoted is that it's just stripped down in a way very secular. In other words, you just meditate and it doesn't depend on any belief system. You don't have to subscribe to any doctrine. You don't have to go through any ritual ceremony. There is no mumbo jumbo, no organized religion. And also, I think linked to it is some of the new technology. So there are apps, meditation apps that you can get, and like you download them and then someone can guide you through your meditation. I have a friend whose daughter sits every day now in her own living room and has a monk guide her through meditation. Naturally, whenever there's a boom, there's a reaction, there's like a backlash. So there have been a number of stories which have been criticizing this as being faddish or as being, a commercialization, commodification of spirituality, or really superficial because it's, just like, maybe it's stylish or it sounds good, tell someone that you do this, or what else? There was one story that was interesting that said, there's actually new studies out which say that there's no greater benefit from meditating than from doing any number of other things that you could do. Like, yeah, it's good for you to meditate, but it's good for you to exercise. It might be good for you to take a nap in the afternoon, too, for that matter. So people have built up all sorts of expectations and idealization about it. And and one story said, actually, meditation may not be good for everybody. There are some people for whom that may actually not be an appropriate thing to do if you're in a very delicate state psychically, or you have a certain kind of history that is, it may make you very, very sensitive to suddenly cutting out all stimulation. And, people can start sitting and have psychological disturbances, right? So maybe it's not the best thing for everyone all the time, right? So I wanted to talk a little bit about this. I won't say from the Zen perspective, but from my perspective, after doing Zen for a while. And I have to say, everything that I say should be taken with a grain of salt, because I haven't been to any of these meditation spots, and I haven't tried out the app, so I really don't know what I'm talking about. But for what it's worth, gives us something to talk about. From my own perspective, I tend to see this in connection to what I was exposed to when I was growing up and started getting interested in meditation. This was in Northern California in the 1970s, which was really the heyday of the New Age. And when I was a teenager, there was this whole cornucopia of therapies and techniques and cults and teachers and virtually everything you can imagine, and a lot of things you can't imagine were available. As it happened, I latched on to Zen. Why did I latch on to Zen? I think it's because it was there. Partly. Zen was in Northern California because Japanese culture was in Northern California, because Japanese immigrants had been coming over for generations in the 20th century. And it was part of the culture. You know, you learned to eat with chopsticks when you were a kid. And a lot of different cultural elements, I think, were sort of natural growing up there. But San Francisco Zen Center also had a wide influence. The cookbooks, Tassajara Bread Book, Suzuki Roshi's teaching. The first catalyst for me was Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. It was seeing the photograph of Suzuki Roshi. I thought, oh, yeah, that's what I'm interested in. And maybe the calligraphy on the front. And then I started looking through the book, and it really got me. So, but what I was interested in was just meditation. And what I was not interested in was any kind of institutional religion. And I grew up about 10 miles away from Tassajara, and I avoided going there until I was in my 30s. I was really averse to organized religion. And So for me, the New Age was kind of interesting, I think, because there were all of these promises about emancipation. I think that interested me. What's the promise here? What is this about? I think I wanted to understand what this freedom is about. But at the same time, I could see that a lot of it was really superficial and absurd. The idea that this was a new age that we were living in seemed to me really silly, because Zen had been around for centuries, for millennia. Buddhism had been around for more than two millennia. And basically, they were talking about the same thing from the beginning. In other words, we all suffer for different reasons, and there is a way for us to deal with our suffering through meditation. And that's, you know, that's the case. Whether you're talking about 2,500 years ago, you're talking about Asia or the West, it's really fundamental and it's ancient, and there's nothing novel about it. But then, you know, after thinking about it for a long time, I also think it's true. The New Age is true. This is a New Age that we're living in. Last week was a New Age, and this week is a New Age, and today's a New Age, and this moment is a New Age. It's just what W.S. Merwin was talking about. The moment, finding the first time, always beginning as it goes. In our tradition, we talk about the three treasures. And the first is Buddha. The second is Dharma. The third is Sangha, which can sound a little empty, these foreign terms that just labels. But what does Buddha really mean? Buddha just means our awakened mind. It is our mind when we're not trapped in the cloud of thoughts and illusions, and we can just be fresh and open and new in this moment. We can see, we can hear, we can smell, we can taste, we can touch without any obstructions. Right now. So that's the mind of Shakyamuni Buddha from 2,500 years ago, and that's your mind whenever you drop your body and drop your mind. And Zen has always... How do we express Buddha? Well, basically by doing Zazen. Zazen is the expression of Buddha mind. We don't do Zazen in order to achieve Buddha mind. We express Buddha mind when we do Zazen. So Zen was always the meditation school. Within Buddhism, it's the one that always placed the most emphasis on meditation. Master Dogen in the 13th century would be asked, what's the essence of Zen? And he would say, Zazen. And they'd say, well, why is Zazen such a big deal? And he'd say, because it's the principal gate. And they'd say, well, lots of other schools do meditation too, so what's the big deal about Zazen? And he says, because it's the principal gate. And then they say, yeah, but Zen, you do all these other things too, like you chant and you do ceremonies and you do work practice. And so why privilege Zazen? And he'd say, because it's the principal gate. But actually, I think that what we do in our Zazen meditation is really not so different from what someone could be doing in the meditation salon next door. I know that you could disagree with me, We don't do guided meditations. We don't concentrate on a particular object. So you could point to certain differences in technique, but really, what we're doing and what anyone can do who sits down for a minute and lets go of their thoughts and is just fully present is doing the same thing that we're doing. Ultimately, what's going on, hopefully, in the meditation salon and what we're doing here is the same. It's Buddha expressing Buddha nature. But where I think maybe there are more differences between what we do in our practice at Village Zendo and what some of the other offerings that are available now on the market or in the neighborhood have to do with Dharma and Sangha. So Dharma means the truth or the law or the teaching, and Dharma is a really fundamental part of what we do here at Village Zendo in lots of different ways. Sometimes we study ancient teachings, the sutras, the Heart Sutra, which we chant about the identity of form and emptiness, or the Lotus Sutra that we study, or the Diamond Sutra, or the Flower Ornament Sutra, or more contemporary texts that we study, or the koan literature that some people work with and that speakers in the Dharma talks to you sometimes. Right? That's also Dharma. What are the koans? A traditional device to let go of our conventional, rationalist, discursive way of thinking and to open up to the essence of the teaching, the essence of Zen, in our life in this moment. That's what the koans are for. What else? We have interview with teachers. We have teacher-student relations. The teacher-student relationship is a really important thing that we offer here that is not widely available if you're just doing a meditation practice on your own. So the teacher-student relationship gives us, when we're students, an opportunity to interact closely with someone who's seen a lot of the pitfalls and potholes that come up in practice and can help steer us when we start to get caught up in things. Maybe even more important, the teacher can help us to really see ourselves as who we are. To really appreciate our Buddha nature, not in an idealized way, but in a real way. But there are lots of problems with Dharma. There are lots of traps that come up with Dharma. We can get too intellectual about the teaching or the doctrines or the texts. We can get formulaic or fall into rote patterns if we look at koans. And the teacher-student relationship can have lots of tricky problems. For one thing, it brings up all sorts of issues around authority and hierarchy, which many people may not want to deal with, and understandably so. And naturally, the kind of hierarchy creates the potential for abuse of power. And we all know stories about abuse of power in teacher-student relations. So So there can be some real traps with Dharma, and there can be some very good reasons why people may not actually want to engage with Dharma study. It might be much much easier way to go just to do your meditation practice and not get into the rest of it. And then Sangha. Sangha is the third treasure, and it's a great treasure because it's very hard to practice on your own, to just do a meditation practice on your own that's really alive, that's really vital, that's not stagnant. It's very hard to do. I've tried it for many years on my own, and it was only after I started sitting with other people, after my resistance to sitting with other people broke down, that I started to see the kinds of benefits, the support that comes from practicing with other people who are directing their attention in the same way. And you meet all sorts of people you'd never meet otherwise, with whom you may have nothing more in common. You may disagree with them politically, or dislike the way they look or dress or whatever your thing is. And yet, it's remarkable how we can forge a kind of connection through this very subtle thing of just sitting together and practicing together. We can see the Buddha nature in other people when we do this. It's quite can be quite remarkable. Certainly was remarkable to me. But of course, Sangha has many problems that go along with it as well. There's the harmony side that you experience, and then there's the disharmony side that you also experience, and that may actually be the most valuable part of Sangha practice, because you have to engage with other people, you have to deal with other people. It's quite inconvenient sometimes. You have to deal with other people's egos and your own. And so you bump up against your Sangha mates and you rub up against them, and it can be quite uncomfortable sometimes, if not drive you crazy. And if you do it, you find yourself at some point saying, why the hell am I dealing with all of this crap? And yet, I actually have come to think that the Sangha jewel is the most important, in a way, ultimately. It's where we can learn the most, develop the most, and where our practice can really come to fruition. So I think that there are a lot of good reasons not to be part of a Zen community, and one of them is Sangha. And it is entirely logical for people not to come sit here at Villa Zendo if you can go sit somewhere where there are no commitments and you can just come and go and you don't have to deal with anybody. So I get that. And yet I think that overall, if we're willing to deal with the pitfalls and the potholes and take the risks that come with studying the Dharma and practicing with others, it adds incredible dimensions to practice. It gives us so much more than just a certainly than a meditation practice, which is really just about relaxing for a little bit in the afternoon, which sounds like a healthy thing. But even for people who have a very committed, serious meditation practice, which is individual, there is a great deal that you can miss out on if you don't know Dharma and you don't know Sangha. It's a trade-off, and I think there are great benefits that come when we're willing to risk it and to open ourselves up to learn and to see ourselves through others. Ultimately, the ideal in Zen and in Mahayana Buddhism is to be of service and to try to help relieve suffering in the world and amongst those around us. And of course, that refers to everyone and everything, partners and family and workmates and the stranger you meet on the subway. But Sangha in this community context is very, very important, I think, because it is we have a kind of laboratory here for learning how to work with the self, to work with the ego, and to work with our suffering. Because others here are also trying to do the same thing. And so we try to follow certain guidelines for conduct. We try to really look at ourselves when there's a conflict or a tension with others, we try to really see ourselves and not just externalize it and blame and dismiss. It's hard work, and yet if we can do it, it can be really, really valuable. But this is a safe place in which to try it out. And the more that we can develop that capacity to work with the suffering, then the more we're able to put it in practice in the broader context in which we live. So I think really there's some, it may be very, very helpful. This meditation boom may be a very good thing for a lot of people. And it may make a lot of sense to follow a practice which is more individual and there may be doors that open through this meditation boom. And yet, I think I appreciate even more what we have here. With all of the challenges that it poses, with all of the pitfalls and potholes, there are dimensions to what we have which are extraordinary and that we are very fortunate to have access to. So I think we don't always appreciate all that we have in this community. But what we have really are treasures. And they are of infinite value. Thank you.